Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we in this show give you guys a bunch of... I'm proud of us. Mostly me, but you like me, so that I would include you
I
and
do.
Us.
I do like you.
We take a deep dive into intern Ryan's dad's request to a sporty car for $30,000 or under to kick around on the weekend. And I think we came up with five good, viable candidates.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that.
All in that price range. And at the top of that price range, you can get something really good.
Yeah, we'll talk some Le Mans talk and some Ferrari talk and some race car talk and some Shelby talk. First, there's Matt.
Yeah, you know, Dodge has officially opened order books for the new 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat. This is the most powerful SUV ever. I've seen the thing. It is badass. It is exclusive for 2021. They're only making 2,000 of these things, so you better scurry along and try to pick one up soon. It's got a new aggressive exterior styling, new interior, and the driver-centric cockpit. And, you know, and all buyers, they get a full day of pro instruction at the Bondurant High Performance Driving School, which is definitely something you want to check out, you know. And if not just the Hellcat, the Dodge Durango RT is pretty awesome as well. It tows a lot and it hauls the bacon. So check out Dodge.com to schedule a test drive. And you know that Dodge is ranked number one in initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So again, check out Dodge.com or hit up one of the dealers to schedule your test drive today.
All right, sports fans, Podcast One has two great new shows for you to check out. Seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry is bringing big guests and great NBA commentary on the Big Shot Bob Pod.
The Brooklyn Nets remind me of Oklahoma Sooner football, and we got to have to outscore you every time, and that's what the Brooklyn Nets are.
Man, you got Steve Nash at the helm. You got D'Antoni. They ain't thinking about no defense.
And Eric Bolling and Brett Favre come together for Bowling with Favre. Everything from sports to politics to business and culture.
Any insight on what Aaron plans to do in Green Bay?
What I read into his comments were simply frustration. Nothing more than that.
Subscribe now to the Big Shot Bob Pod and Bowling with Favre on the Podcast One app, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And rate and review the shows on Apple for your chance to be featured.
Choice for the gun mandate. Get it on. The openings of the show have been a little bumpy because Ryan is in charge of the board.
We're breaking
now.
In the new guy.
Breaking him in. All right. So I'm Adam Kroll. I'm at the Motorator. DeAndrea over there talking all things cars. Let's see. So a few things coming up. I guess Netflix has some new car show where they follow a family. Guy's a stunt driver and blah, blah, blah. And they want to go out to Willow Springs and challenge meet or race against him. And he's got this Corvette with a Volvo wagon body on it or something. And they want to know, do I have a car that I could bring? Blah, blah, blah. So we're trying to figure that out. I was thinking the Porsche Cup car is probably the best car
that.
Why not, right?
Yeah. That'd be a good car to run. It needs to stretch its legs.
Fun. Be a good excuse for us to take it out and get out to Willow Springs and make a day of it up on not the streets of Willow and not the big track.
Oh, and the horse trail, or what's it called? The horse
something up there.
Something with a horse.
Yeah. I doomed myself because I was like, yeah, I'll go to Willow Springs because I never liked Willow Springs, but then we did the Trans Am race there, and I got a lot of seat time and a lot of laps in. And I was like, oh, good. I know that track now, and then it's on the track I've never run on.
Horse thief.
That's how it goes.
That's what?
Yeah, the horse thief.
Yeah. I drove on it once in, I want to say, possibly the Lexus LFA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we did two two tracks. We did Streets of Willow and then that thing for...
Is that smaller than the Streets?
You know, I don't recall it was, but I don't remember it as being nearly as used for some reason. So it just felt a little more even sparse, like like you're running through the desert. it just felt more like, yeah. I don't know, like a little more go-kart-ish.
Mm-hmm. Is... what's going on with the LFAs? I haven't seen any of those things come across the blocks lately.
You know,
I can't tell where that car is value-wise.
Yeah, I know a guy that bought one about a year or so ago and loves it. I see it. You're right. It hasn't popped up much, I think, at some of the, you know, the Goodings and RMs. But I think I recall seeing one pop up at a Barrett Jackson a year or two ago. You know, I haven't been following the online auctions quite as much as the live events because it takes a little bit of the pizzazz out of it. But I believe they're still getting good money holding their value on those cars. And there was a couple special editions. I think there was like a Nürburgring edition, and that was a very expensive one. But that's a great car.
Yeah.
Just sounds fantastic. And
completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much. I don't see a price. Oh,
there it is, 440,000.
Well, that is down from its sticker, I think. Although I don't remember what the sticker is now.
Yeah, so I want to say 600, but I don't know if that was the Nürburgring edition, and maybe these were going in the $500,000 range. You know.
Well, let's see. As we spoke about last week, or I think we did, that Pratt & Miller Corvette sold. Did we talk about that on
the
air?
Yeah, we did. And we took a couple guesses on the price. And I think it did surprisingly well. I think your feeling is it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah. I think I deflated my guess because yours was a little deflated. So yeah. You drug me down a little bit. I don't know if you were in the sixes and I was in the sevens.
Yeah, I think I was at like 650. I think you said 750.
Probably. Although I was saying when the car was 950 for sale, I was like, I think this is a good buy. Now, when you're being advertised for 950,
yeah,
that means you could have picked up the phone and probably got it for 850.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, yeah, I wasn't thinking full freight at 950, but I was thinking somewhere in the eights, and I think that's a good buy somewhere in the eights. And evidently, some people on Bring a Trailer did too, because it got 855 with the VIG, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's a sign. That's a 2014 car. So that's just a sign that modern race cars are getting expensive.
And it shows you what's going on online. Like, the dealer was selling this car for 950, and like you're saying, probably would have taken 850.
Mm-hmm.
But it just wasn't finding an audience,
right,
at that dealer. And then Bring a Trailer found the audience,
right,
for it, you know?
Yeah.
And now, what's interesting is there are several other Bring a Trailer competitors popping up on all these different sites. And there's one that just came up. I got to remember the name. It's like Wall Street Cars or Wall Street Bids or something like that. And they have a Ken Block rally car.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first car they consigned, and I believe that's selling in a day. Maybe it's Chris could probably find it. I think it's called like Wall Street Cars or Wall Street Bids or something like that. And it's got one of Ken Block's, I think the Subaru, I think the black rally car. And they had a bunch of other really good cars on the site. Now, this is a new site, so I'm curious what sort of traction they're going to get. Is it going to be like the Stratus auction or some of the other ones?
But
interesting.
You and I have been saying for quite some time, because there's kind of an old guard that's out there, and Wall Street Motorsport, there's an old guard out there. It's got 50 seconds left.
Oh, wait, 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so it's good timing, right?
So there's a lot of, there's like old guard out there, and they want to sell Clayton Cunningham 300Z,
yeah,
you know, turbo car. And you and I are like, put it on, bring a trailer.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, that's not the right place for it.
But Hemmings is the right place.
Right. And so their thing is, I think they're trapped in some world where, hey, that's where you buy a stock BMW 3 Series, you know,
right,
or maybe you get a Porsche 928S there for $71,000. But this car is a $600,000-$800,000 car. You don't bring it there.
Yeah.
So then they bring it over to some sort of boutique auction house, and it doesn't get traffic, and the things are no sales.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
my feeling is look, if that Pratt & Miller Corvette can sell for $850 on there, then there's no reason why the 300ZX, the Clayton Cunningham car, there's no reason why that couldn't get $725 there on the same. Or
yeah,
if you're not getting $725 there, that means the car ain't worth $725. I mean, they're getting, I don't know if I want to say all the money. They're getting the proper money.
Right.
Market
price.
They're establishing the market value of a car.
That's the market value. And I think you're getting that. Actually, another car just came up, and it's interesting because I think it's at the wrong place. I'll tell you about it in a second. First, let me just remind you guys that Dodge, you know, our friends at Dodge are ranked number one in initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. And this is the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule your test drive today.
I have a little research assignment for Max Zapata while you're telling me about the new and interesting car. As I sort of study the market, so, you know, something like that Pratt & Miller Vet, it won its class at Daytona and it won its class at Sebring. But that's in 2014 or 15. I don't know what year it is exactly. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm curious of your take. We have that Porsche, the Porsche won its class at Le Mans, but it also came in second overall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's 1979. But that's a podium finish class or not. And, you know, second overall at Le Mans is not bad first in its class. In the more modern cars, if you came in and that car won Daytona and that car won Sebring outright, if you came in first in your class at Daytona in 2015, you may have come in ninth overall or seventh overall. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the overall, as the cars got more modern and more spectacular and everything, you know, I wonder if dropping down the spreadsheet, the winning timesheet, I wonder if that affects it at all. Like, obviously, you'd rather what you want is you win your class, win overall. If you can't do that, you want win your class, second overall. Win your class, 11th overall is good, but you're still you're missing a little. And I'm also curious because I would just assume that in the modern era, that Pratt & Miller Corvette, you can go online, they'll just tell you who won the whole. There's websites, they'll just kind of run it right down and tell you, you know, here's how they finished. I wonder if that thing not finishing in the top five, but winning its class, you know, I wonder if that affects it at all.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting because now I'm starting to wonder, are the car companies seeing that as well? Because at Le Mans, they're doing, I think they're either getting rid of LMP1 and they're going to like a hypercar category, a supercar category. I think they're going to call it hypercar.
Mm-hmm.
And Ferrari just recently announced that they are going to be making a hypercar to compete in that category because they've won their GT classes multiple times, but they haven't won overall since, 1965.
Right.
And Ferrari wants an overall win.
Thus that... Yeah, right.
And so now they're going back and they're saying, hey, now that we don't have to do an LMP car, we can make this new hypercar category, which is the top of the food chain, I guess, there, and we can go for an overall Le Mans win. And I think some of the other big car manufacturers are going to be able to do that, right? You're not going to get the funky, you know, prototype car. I think you might be able to get something that looks more, I don't know, sellable, I guess is the right term.
Yeah, I don't know if the hypercar...
what's it going to be? What's it going to look like? Is it going to be like a LaFerrari version?
I personally, if I ran, and yeah, 1965, when we talk about that 330 LM or possibly 250 LM, but I think it's a 330 LM. We always talk about like what's the most expensive Ferrari on the planet, and everyone says GTO. It's like no, it's an LM, which was the last car Ferrari built to win overall. Now, if you own that car, you're probably rooting that Ferrari doesn't win overall again. So you get to maintain, you know, you get to have the mantle of the last. Sort of like how the Miami Dolphins always root against any team that's 13-0 because they're the last team to go do a perfect season. Oh. And at some point when the team is 14-0, they stumble and they lose and they chill the champagne over there in Miami.
Yeah, you know, that's similar, but I think it's going to be a little different than the LM car going because, you know, we...
Well, if I were in charge of...
If somebody bought the Dolphins on the fact that it was 13-0, right. Then...
if they were 15-0 back then, maybe they played a 12-game season. Anyway, if I was in charge of Le Mans, I would say, we're going to get rid of the spaceship class. I want shit that looks kind of production-based, even if it was... super hyper cars. I want shit that looks like a car as we know it. It's more exciting because you don't have the hyper cars. I mean, not hyper car, but you don't have the spaceship, you know, buzzing past the guys who've entered the privateers and the Miata.
Yeah.
You know, but
I would argue two events.
Yeah.
Right. So you can have two overall.
But I'm with you in that Ferrari, whoever's entered the hypercar realm, you want the thing to look like a product, to be at least a derivative of a product that they might manufacture at some point. And I don't know what the hypercars are supposed to
look
like.
I don't know what it's supposed to look like. And it was just an announcement saying Ferrari intends to make a car for that category to take a shot at an overall win.
But they're getting rid of the LMP1.
That's what I understand.
Because they don't like the spaceship nature of it?
I don't know, but isn't there LMP2?
I guess.
I don't know what the engine is. We got to look into it some more. But
all right. So now you got to guess in Daytona in 2015 or 14 where that vet finished. Now, all you have to do, Max Pat, is just go results, Daytona. 24 hours of Daytona.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying.
And then you just scroll down and eventually you'll get to one that says winner of the GT class and it'll say Corvette next to it and that'll be the car.
Yeah, so I see.
Hold on.
Okay, so it won its class, but the LMP cars, assuming there was the two versions of the LMP cars, they take the top spots. I think
sometimes they break down and shit happens, you know.
Yeah. I think it'd be, you win your class, I think you're probably around 8th overall.
Yeah, that's I sort of had it 7th, 9th, somewhere in there.
I'm going with 8.
I'll go 9th.
Okay, Sebring, 10th.
Ooh, close.
And then Daytona, 4th.
Hmm. Well, that's different. I would have thought it'd be the other way around. So 4th overall at Daytona, and 10th at Sebring.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there's a longevity thing. 12 hours versus 24. Maybe the LMPs didn't have the consistency or something. That's good. But you still want that on the podium, kind of thing.
You're right. If you're first in class, you want to be top 3 overall.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Either way, I think that car was well bought, and I think they got a fair price for it. And I don't think you're ever going to lose on that car.
Yeah, I think it's good. And you're right. Like, what can Chevrolet do to take the entire podium? You know, And what can Ferrari do to take the podium?
Is there any renderings of what the hypercars might look like?
I didn't see it in the news that I read.
Or
I
any hypercar.
I didn't see. No, maybe Chris can find what's going to be the hypercar Le Mans class. What do those cars look like? But while you look that up, we were talking about online versus, you know, picking the right auctions and whatnot. So there's a Shelby Daytona Coupe that's coming up for sale. Excuse me.
A real one?
No. Sort of.
Okay.
So it was not one of the original six, but Carroll Shelby personally owned it, and he had converted a Cobra to the coupe. And then in vintage racing over the years, it was driven by a number of people. There's a list here on this picture. Phil Hill.
What?
Derek Hill. Derek what? Bell, John Morton, Danny Sullivan, and Brian Redman.
Well, it's got an impressive list of drivers. What year do you think it got converted? That's kind of the question.
Yeah.
You know, it's always, there's kind of two kinds of continuation cars. There's the ones that were done almost immediately, and then the ones that were done, you know, decades later. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that thing was converted... And it makes sense that it would be. If that, first off, I never knew that car existed, number one. Number two, if that car existed and was, sorry, if that car was converted in Venice Beach at the Shelby shop, you know, back in the day, that's a much bigger deal versus, you know, done later on with the, you know, we worked with Superformance and they made a fiberglass body for us or, you know, that kind of thing.
It's interesting. We're trying to find more information. There's some bullet points. It's at Worldwide Auctioneers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're saying it was previously owned and driven by Carroll Shelby. The current owner purchased it directly from Carroll Shelby.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's it. They got the documentation. They got Shelby's name. They got vintage racing history with wins at Laguna Seca and Goodwood. The drivers that I mentioned.
Right.
McCluskey Daytona Coupe body commissioned by Carroll Shelby when he owned the car.
Yeah.
So he had it made.
But they don't say what year.
No, because it's in the Shelby registry and they call it a 65.
Mm-hmm. 289. So it's at least a 289 Cobra.
Yes.
Probably not a 454. I mean a 427.
Right. They're not. I'm going to have to find it in some of the paperwork.
Are there any estimates?
I don't see an estimate listed here. And I didn't see an estimate like on the news article that was submitting it, but they obviously brought up other cars. They're like, well, what does this mean? Because, you know, a restored 65 427 Cobra sold for $5.94 million. And then, you know, one of the original Daytona Coupes sold in 2009 for $7.25 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shelby's, you know, his big block twin supercharged, you know, whatever Cobra sold for, I don't know, $13.75 million in 2016. It's coming up again at Barrett-Jackson. So
It's coming up again.
Oh, no, that was the first Cobra.
Oh, okay.
That was the first Cobra. But his other, his $6 million, $5.something million personal 427 Super Snake with the twin superchargers, that's coming up again at Barrett-Jackson. It sold like three times over there.
Did so when's the auction over?
So this is this auction is coming up. Give me a second to look for it because it's not.
All right. Well, I'll buy you a little time. I think Ryan had a question. Newly minted board running Ryan had a question.
Yeah. So my dad called me this weekend and we were talking cars and he's looking for just a fun vintage car to drive on the weekends, maybe around $30,000. He did mention a Fiat Pininfarina Spider or something like that.
124, probably. Yeah. See if it's a 124 Fiat. Yeah. Go ahead.
And so, yeah, he's just he just wants suggestions. He just wants something fun to drive. He's got an Audi hatchback right now, and so he's looking for something a little more fun.
A little vintagey.
A little vintagey.
I'm not a Fiat fan. Fiats of that era are pretty temperamental and pretty tough.
I think the Fiats and the Alfa Romeos of that era are going to be a little finicky. Also, you're a big dude. Is your dad a big dude?
Yeah, big dude. He's like 6'3".
Okay, so maybe not the Fiat. If he's a lanky dude, but if you got some shoulders on you, you know, with the top up on any one of those, you know.
Well, they're all the kind of fun stuff you're talking about is going to be a little tight squeeze from that era. I'm always a fan of the Datsun 2000 Roadsters. They're pretty spacious inside. I mean, they're not too small inside. Actually, they're small. The race car steering wheel rubs against the stick shift knob practically. You can't get your fucking leg through there.
Yeah.
See, test fit some. I think a 2000 Datsun Roadster is a cool car. I think you can't go wrong with the 240Z, of course. There's trying to scroll through my brain here. I don't like MG stuff that much. Do you like MG stuff?
I was never really that much of a fan of it, but it sounded like your dad's got a little bit of an eye for the European.
Yeah,
you know,
he does.
He's not looking for a muscle car or anything.
What are those old Volvo coupes going for? Those little sporty coupes?
I don't know. There's someone in my neighborhood has like four of them on his driveway.
They're kind of good looking. They're gutless. I'll tell you my problem with all these old MGs and Triumphs and Spitfires and Fiats, and I fucking hate a four banger with an underhead cam.
Yeah.
And a tin valve cover, like a stamped tin valve cover. Fucking hate it. The reason I've always liked the Datsuns is that big cast aluminum valve cover and an overhead cam. The thing that's obviously super cool about anything Lotus is that twin cam up top.
Yeah, the Lotus is cool. I don't think that gets you in your price range.
Which is a cool piece. But all those British cars, none of them are overhead cam cars, and not the Fiats weren't either. That Volvo made essentially a sports car in like the 60s, and I have no idea what those things are trading for now. And it's not an overhead cam car, so I'm probably going against my own argument. I don't think it is, but it's a cool piece.
Yeah.
It's cool looking.
You know, does your dad want to mess around with it a little? Is he going to go under the hood? Is he going to fiddle?
No, he's not going to fiddle.
You know, because another might be a little fun car would be like a 289 Sunbeam Tiger.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of fits in that era.
Or
you can get parts. Yeah, you can get parts for it at any auto parts store.
Yeah.
You know, if you need distributor cap or something.
Those are 80 grand though, right?
I don't really know how to
those aren't those aren't 30.
You might find one with a little work.
A lot of work. I don't think you're gonna find any Sunbeam Tigers for under 50
they're probably going
these days.
Up. The tough thing is I don't know what you could buy for 30 grand. I mean, you know, these days it's
your dad to fucking step it up, man.
Yeah.
30 grand.
Spend more money.
He used to have a Porsche, but like he could have afforded like a new Porsche, and he just decided to get this old one a couple of years ago pre-divorce, and it just was always breaking down. He was hitting crap on the freeway and
yeah,
had all these issues.
Probably because he called it Porsche
instead of Porsche. there's gonna be issues with everything. It's hard to beat the Datsuns because they're just so bulletproof, you know. So you might. I like the 2000 Roadster. That car hauls ass. That is a potent 2-liter motor in that car.
Yeah, it's a fun car. It'd be interesting. You kind of want to check out some of the car shows and like some of the drive-in events that the Peterson does.
Mm-hmm.
They do a Ferrari one, they do a variety one, they do a Japanese one, and those are kind of fun to go and see some of them up close and see if you could actually even fit in something. You know, chat somebody up, see who, you know, what other big guys own them, and maybe look around.
Ooh,
on that.
I'm going to go against my British motor underhead cam advice. I'll tell you what I like for 30 grand, and I think they're out there for 30 grand. They're bigger and they look good.
Mm-hmm.
Triumph TR6.
Yeah.
I think that's your dad's car. See if there's a, you know, they did a great kind of a almost a midnight blue in that car. It's kind of good looking. They're good looking cars. Yeah. Racing Green.
TR6 is cool.
They're a little bigger, they're a little more muscular, you know, for cars of that era. You see what a TR6 is trading for, and I'm curious about that Volvo, too. Yeah, there you go. You got a 69 that went for 24.7, and then you got one that went for 12. And you know, don't get the cheapest one out there. See if you can get one of the nicer ones out there. Yeah, you don't have to give us the ones that haven't had the result yet. But the average.
It's a cool-looking car.
It's a nice-looking car. They work. They got some race histories, we all know. And I think you pay 25 grand. Looks like you get a pretty nice example of one of those.
Yeah.
Look at this car. We're looking at it now. It's like a, I don't know, blue with a tan interior. It's a little more sturdy. It's kind of a good-looking car. Do that. There's also a Jensen. Ooh, I'm taking a deep dive here. You remember Jensen's? Mm-hmm. Jensen Healey? Austin Healey? Jensen? Jensen had a little convertible, too, that was kind of a cool car. I'm not exactly sure. You don't see him around anymore.
Yeah.
Probably British. Don't know what a Jensen, not an Interceptor, Maxipata, but the little convertible. Don't know what those things are trading for. These days, you've forced me down a deep, dark road where I have to think about all these weird British cars. They're mostly British.
Yeah, the Jensen Healey, Jensen like 72 Healey. To 76. It's a little British two-seater roadster. Ooh, it has a two-liter Lotus engine.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it's got this.
Do you think it's a two-cam?
I bet it's
one of these stupid things where it's like derived from the Lotus engine that you wish was in this car, but it's not.
Maybe that's why it sells for $22,000. No, I don't know what it sells for, but
see what those Jensen Healeys are going for as well. You're gonna have to find us like a kind of nice example of one, but one's up there for 18, one's up there for 16. They're cheaper than the. But my take is, get if your dad's budget is 30, get the goddamn nicest Jensen Healey out there.
Or the TR6 or something.
Get a TR6 that a guy did a nut and bolt restoration on.
Because you don't
want to
futz
now.
With it, right? You want to get the nice one and enjoy it on the weekend. Yeah, you're right. Get the cleanest one you can afford.
What was the power plant for that Jensen? And then Max Pata, where's my Volvo? Now, they really only made like kind of one sports car, probably early 70s, late 60s.
The P1800, does that sound
right? I got to see it. But
and I'm sorry, did you say it was a convertible or not?
No,
it matter?
Okay. No, it's a coupe. I've never seen one, a convertible.
The Lotus 907 engine, which I believe is in the Jensen, is a dual overhead cam.
Oh, then you want that Jensen, man. Yeah, we're looking at the Volvo now, the P1800.
The torqueless wonder. it's not a good, like, go torqueless and then spice it up with wonder. I don't know that
it
helps.
Just means you're a high-revving dude, you know? What are those Volvos going for? That's an interesting, what is that, made from like the late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, mainly 60s, but.
Mainly
60s. Yeah,
in this one. They're funky. They're Volvos, but they're kind of cute. If you,
what were the prices?
I don't know what the prices are
on
those.
Yeah, you got to zoom in a little there. I can't
read them from here.
Yeah.
All right. Let me tell you about Geico, and I'll let
23, 17, 16, 12, 5. Yeah, those three cars all in the same price range.
Basically. I'm a goddamn genius. And what are 2000 Roadsters going for now? They're probably in about the same. Same, right? They're kind of good looking cars, those Volvos.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the Volvo to know it's quarks, though. Like, you know, when you hit a bump, there's a dart off the road.
Like, it's going to be a shit show. Dad's going to be frustrated and angry after this experience. But it's kind of cool looking car. Yeah. And kind of interesting.
Yeah, actually, all three of those cars are kind of cool. But the Volvo, though, is interesting because if you don't want the convertible, then Volvo, right?
Right, right. Maybe the leader in the clubhouse is the TR6. It's a good looking, it's kind of muscular. It's a six-cylinder, by the way. All these other ones are like four-bangers.
Yeah, four. The torqueless wonder.
The Volvo could be a five-cylinder. I mean, who the fuck knows with Volvo? I'm curious what, it's 1,800 cc's, probably a four-cylinder. The TR6, pretty stout, straight six.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell your dad to get the TR6 and do a Z-Car engine swap on it. He's going to have to hustle up like a bell housing adapter or something.
Yeah.
No, don't tell him to do that. I'm lying.
He's literally typing.
Although someone must have done that.
Yeah, that's probably.
Same size engine, right?
Yeah. You know, Honda has the Honda Civic Type R crate engine for $9,000 with the electronics. You get any one of those cars with a shell and drop in that 300 horsepower.
Yeah, do the Volvo 1800 with the crate engine.
With the crate engine, the little Honda crate engine.
Yeah, get the Scattergram Maxipata on the 2000 Roadster, because I'm curious, Datsun that is. I'm curious what those things are going for. All right, let me tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, and I bet you work hard. So how about you save a little dough with Geico when you get your bundle on? Geico makes it easy to take your homeowner or your automotive and your automotive policy or your renter's policy and just put them together. Geico.com. Get a quote. See just how much you could be saving. Geico makes it that easy at Geico.com. Visit Geico.com. All right. Now the 2000 Roadster, not the 1600. Yeah, they look like, if that in fact is the 2000 Roadster price on Bring a Trailer, there's some expensive ones in there, but they coalesce in the 20. I think you're too low. I think you got some 1600s or 1800s or whatever the hell.
I don't think they have the scattergram for the 2000 Roadster.
Oh, that's it?
They just have it as the Roadster.
Oh, there.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Tell your dad you don't want the 1600, but find us a couple decent 2000 Roadsters and let's see what they're going for up in here. Well, that's a beater. Yeah, a nice 2000 Roadster, 15 to 20, seems like.
Yeah,
and people do those cars up, like people do restorations on those and fresh rebuilds and all that kind of stuff. Spend $25,000 on a 2000 Roadster, you're going to get a nice example of a 2000 Roadster. And those things not only had a overhead cam motor with an aluminum head and a cast aluminum valve covers, we've already
all things
figured
your dad
out that
won't
I
care
like.
About.
But how about this?
Yeah.
Factory 5-speed.
That's true.
Things came with a 5-speed in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I mean, how many cars in the 60s had a 5-speed? Well, I'll answer for your favorite American cars, fucking zero. Zero 5-speeds in the 60s on American cars. But, and the Z was a 4-speed after the Roadster, but the Roadster had a 5-speed.
Yeah.
I don't really know the story of that, but you know, they probably thought, oh, the Z's got an extra 400 cc's, so it's got a little more torque, or maybe we can get by, or I need to make room for, or something. But how many sports cars in the 60s were 5-speeds?
Well, no one was making a box to handle the power and the torque of the V8 cars, of the muscle cars.
Here's where it comes.
So there you go. Yeah. So when you get a little tiny, when you get the cute little Roadster with the four cylinders that makes no power, you could put whatever you want in it for a transmission. I'm just, you know.
It's also a framed car. It's on a frame.
It is on a frame. It's actually surprisingly heavy for a little tiny car.
Well, it's on a frame. It's got a live rear axle and leaf springs in the rear too. So it's not a weird car. It's old meets new. I mean, it's got a 5-speed and aluminum head and overhead cam, and then it's got Leaf Springs.
What does your dad drive now?
What, Audi
he has an Audi hatchback.
Yeah, so this is basically the same. He won't notice the difference at all. yeah, those are all good. I think you're going to have some fun looking around now that you got some options.
And the Volvo's in that price range, right?
The Volvo, all of those cars, the all Volvo, those... the TR6. The TR6 is going to be the peppiest one of them, you know? But all of those cars also have fan base, so...
Yeah, forums, lots of clubs and forums,
you know, clubs and
stuff.
And, like, you're going to be able to find support for those types of things, you know?
I also think that, you know, 30 would get you a very nice example of every one of those cars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you definitely want. Just get the best example you can find, and you'll be in good shape. And I'm kind of surprised at those Jensen Healey's, which is something I just... farted out because I've not thought about a Jensen Healey.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever even
not
talked
many
about
have.
A Jensen Healey. Show me the engine. Is there a Jensen Healey with the hood popped?
There isn't a, because I saw it on Wikipedia. It had the engine, and it's, yeah, it had the little the little overhead cam, dual overhead cam.
Yeah.
That's not it.
That's not it. Because now we're looking at a non overhead cam. Yeah. Now, to be fair, ooh, look at
there
that
there you go.
Thing.
See it off to the side?
Sorry, the wrong tab open.
Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, that's a good picture. See?
It's kind of a cool piece.
It's kind of a cool looking piece. Now, that one obviously is done right. That's the one your dad should buy.
See if
because
you can...
that one is at a car show and it's done,
all right.
You know, to the nines. That's...
Mm-hmm. Got the mini lights or Panasports mm-hmm. or mini sports or mini light Panasport things, rims on there.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a oil cooler in the front.
Show us a nice picture lines. Of one of those cars. I think that would be an interesting, that's a little more of a conversation piece than a Z car.
Right, but talk to a few people that own these cars, figure them out, read into the forums. That's part of the fun is doing the research. Find out what the quirks are because everyone's going to go, oh, everyone that gets one of these things, you got to do a thing. Like you got to change this bushing or you got to do this, like, or they, you know, something overheats and you got to do the oil cooler upgrade. Everybody's got one, a thing. Mm-hmm. They've all got like a thing. You got to do this to the steering or you got to change the half shafts or the axle.
Yeah.
You know, they've all got a bug.
Not the 240Z. That's out of the box, but that works. But these cars are all going to have some fucked up thing. They're going to give it, oh, the engine mounts always go bad. You got to go with the solid engine mount.
Right.
You can't do
that. And it's usually a thing like that. It's like it's a wear item or it's a cooling issue. And people say, oh, they run better when you run a separate oil cooler or you got to get this aftermarket radiator. Why, mm-hmm. If it has the radiator swap, everybody's good. Or the, you know, like, oh, it's you got to use the certain water pump, you know, that kind of thing. But
did you find out what the Ken Block car went for?
Oh, yeah. Go back to that. Well, while you look that up, so the worldwide auctions with Shelby's Daytona Coupe, his personal one, is April 23 through 24. And then the other bit of news as far as dates, because of we live in a COVID world, is Amelia Island dates have changed from to May. And it's going to be May 20 through 23 or something like that.
The Ken Block Subarus at 142
yeah,
with
wow.
1 minute left.
It was $82,000 15 minutes ago.
So, and I don't know how this auction works, if they keep do the ad time like they do with Bring a Trailer or how that works.
Well, we'll find out in less than a minute. So Amelia Isle auction has moved to May, and then Gooding, who does their auction there, said that they're going to do their live event in 22, but they're going to do their geared online event during that same Amelia auction time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be their online only auction. So look forward to that. I'm sure they're going to have some good stuff over there at Gooding. So yeah, 30 seconds left on the clock. Let's see how this works. It probably has. Now, we don't know if this is the last bid or if it resets the clock, but it probably works similar to...
it's at 145K with 10 seconds left now.
No, it went to 2 minutes, though, if you look at the...
Oh, it did.
Oh, okay.
2 minutes. Yeah, so it did reset. When they
We'll report back to you guys on the next show because we got to wrap this bad boy. You can see me in Reno, Virginia Street Brewhouse, March 19th and 20th, doing stand-up there. And then Los Angeles, Jam in the Van Speakeasy out here, March 25th, two shows. Adam Ray's going to open. Dawson's going to open as well. Go to amcroll.com for all the live shows. And what do you got, man?
Driving a bunch of cars. You guys want to check them out? Follow me at Moderator on social media.
And before we leave, I want to throw it to Geico one more time for an interesting road trip story. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, sure you do. One or the other, right? How about you bundle those policies with Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance, I should say, along with your auto policies. Speaking of auto, let me tell you another great road trip story. What could be better than your road trip story, driving a Bugatti through the hills of Malibu and on PCH?
It was a short drive and be able to get in that car with a professional driver, one of Bugatti's driving instructors, and cruise up PCH. It's a beautiful day, and then cut through Malibu Road and hit the canyons, hit the tunnel that's out there.
The tunnel's great. There's a narrow tunnel that just cuts right through a mountain. Barely enough room for two cars to pass each other going the opposite direction.
1,500 horsepower,
you open
quad
it up.
Turbo through
the
that
sound.
Thing is just amazing. And then cruise on back down, you know, under the trees of Topanga, back down to PCH. It's the nicest little two-hour day you could spend out here on the coast.
It had to be tough for the Bugatti instructor, though. I mean, 2 hours of faking an Italian accent.
Yeah, plus he was British.
Oh, no.
Although he spoke with a British accent, but he said he was from Miami. So I don't know what's going on there.
So were you in the car for 2 hours?
Yeah, I was just driving it for 2 hours. By the way, I don't know about the Italian because the Bugatti's French.
Oh, that's... That's right.
Yeah.
But Bugatti's Italian, isn't he?
I guess he's Italian.
What's Bugatti's first name?
EB. Remember the EB?
Oh, that's right. It's a French car. Yeah. Bugatti sounds so Italian.
Yeah, it's French.
And French, I mean, they did some, they have
and
some
they're owned
car
by Germans.
History.
They're owned by Volkswagen.
Well, it's multinational.
Yeah,
now.
It's all multinational.
Gary, find out if Bugatti was an Italian guy who moved to France to begin his car career.
Yeah.
Or just a Frenchman. And if so, I should apologize. But either way, this guy picked a neutral accent in
English.
Yeah,
he went with the British.
That's just the accent of I'm better than you. I mean, that's why in all futuristic movies, the computer sounds British.
Yeah, he gets to say things like lovely and stylish and posh.
Mm-hmm. So, Ettore, Bugatti, Italian-born French...
Paisan!
Automobile designer.
Italian-born.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what it is. So, he was there, and then he moved there, and they can... But everyone can claim him, like Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
She's a world citizen, and so is Ettore or something Bugatti.
Yeah.
Well, nice job on the, what a road trip. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could be saving when you bundle at geico.com. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.